This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll have continued fallout from that altercation fight, whichever word you want to put on it, between Raheem Sterling and Joe Gomez. Obviously, Sterling will not be involved tomorrow night against Montenegro. What's your view on that? Should Southgate have made that decision, or should they have just kept it in-house? So we'll be having fallout from that. We'll also be having a chat a little bit about Spurs, Bournemouth and Burnley to come in the hour. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp here on the Premier League Fan Show. So plenty to come over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558, if you want to have your voice heard here on the Premier League Fan Show. So obviously there's been, there is continuing fallout from the altercation fight, whichever words you want to use for it, between Raheem Sterling and Joe Gomez on Monday. Obviously, Gareth Southgate made the decision to drop Raheem Sterling for tomorrow night's game against Montenegro, England's 1,000th game. No indication yet as to whether he'll be dropped for Sunday. We would assume, because he's training, that he would be in contention for Sunday's game, but he has been dropped. And as time has gone on, we've learned more and more about exactly what happened. Now, what is believed is that when Joe Gomez entered into the canteen where Raheem Sterling already was, he came in laughing with a group of other players, and Sterling didn't take too well to that. He went up to him, grabbed him, saying, "Think you are the big man." He completely lost it, grabbed Gomez. Differing reports of whether he got him in a headlock, whether he throttled him. So a few still kind of uncertainties as to exactly the nature of the fight. It did leave Joe Gomez with a scratch on his face underneath his right eye. Sterling obviously apologised very quickly afterwards. But at one point it did look like he was going to leave. But a call from Jordan Henderson, who hadn't yet met up with the squad because he's suspended for tomorrow night's game, made or convinced him to stay around rather than leave. I think what you'd say is that Sterling's actions were rather poor. You think of if you're in work or at school, for example, and someone makes a jibe about your football team or another sporting team and kind of has a laugh at your team's expense, you don't just react by going and throttling someone and going and confronting them. So I think we have more about us than doing that. Now, Sterling has apologised, and I think sometimes you just kind of have to accept apologies rather than hold a grudge in this case. Sterling was completely in the wrong, but he has apologised for it. My personal view is it should have been kept in-house, and it could have been dealt with within England camp because it was in a private domain. It wasn't done in a public sphere. It wasn't done with the public viewing it. So personally, I think it should have been dealt with behind closed doors. I'm sure this has happened so many times in England duty. It just hasn't been made public. There's obviously been a real contrast in the way that people have viewed this situation. Some are saying that Gareth Southgate has done exactly the right thing. So Gary Neville obviously made 85 appearances for England between 1995 and 2007. This is what he said. "I've been involved in quite a few of these things with England, and there is no right or wrong in the sense that I've seen managers sweep it under the carpet. I've also seen managers go public, as Gareth has. What I would say is that the decision that Gareth has made, I feel like it's the right one without knowing the detail of what's gone on. However, Rio Ferdinand had a very different view to what Neville does. He says, in the various squads I've been a part of, I've seen players get punched in the face, ribs broken, nose busted, head kicked like a football. A throat grab was the equivalent of the intricate handshake embraces that are all too familiar today. Gareth would no doubt had seen worse many times during his time as a player and manager. I just feel this could and should have been handled better to support the player and not hang him out to dry. Gary Lineker, players care, players fall out. Players have tantrums. It's a competitive, pressured, often heated environment. Players get over these things. No big deal. Move on." I'm more in that camp that what Sterling did was unacceptable, But I think it's one of those things that would have happened so many times on England duty. Not to say there's right that someone has a bust up like that, but it's done within the confines of St George's Park with no one being able to necessarily see it. I think Southgate has made a rod for his own back. It's potentially something that could backfire on him. And I also asked the question, and it's a good question to ask, if this was a World Cup final that England were approaching, and Sterling had been the player of the tournament up to that point, would he make the same decision? Now, only Gareth Southgate himself can tell you the answer to that question, but I just have an inkling that he wouldn't make the same decision. One man that knows Gareth Southgate rather well is the former Middlesbrough and Cardiff striker Andy Campbell, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on the breakfast show this morning. And they started off by asking him about how he views the way that Gareth Southgate has handled the situation between Raheem Sterling and Joe Gomez.
I think it's probably the last thing he thought was going to happen. I think obviously with the way that players are with them currently with the high pressures and things, you know what I mean? I probably didn't think that he thought this week was just going to be playing Sterling going to the international break and games. But I think he's handled things pretty well. As I say, more himself and probably the group. But the decision for me probably could have been avoided. And the player who's missing out playing for his country was obviously very passionate about his football and very passionate about what happened at the weekend. And you know what I mean? You've been there, Rich, yourself, that things happen on the training pitch, things happen in the changing room, things happened in house, and sometimes you just got to deal with it yourself, and hopefully sometimes the things can't come out. But I think at the minute, with social media being as big as it is and media being as big as it is, that I think it's impossible sometimes to keep everything away from the public. And I just think maybe that if it was anybody else other than Raheem, maybe it wouldn't have been as made as big thing. Maybe, I don't know. You know what I mean? Because obviously the press and Raheem haven't got the best of relationships as well. So I don't think that's helped him.
Yeah, you make a good point. Actually, we touched on it yesterday where, you know, I was asked about situations at Watford or Brentford. And of course, things go on. And I'm sure it did for yourself at Middlesbrough Cardiff. But I guess when it's happening on a smaller scale or a smaller environment, then the chances are, even if it does get out, no one cares as much. Whereas I guess, would that have been his worry that if it had kept this under wraps and it had got out, that he might have looked bad for trying to keep it from the press?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it probably would have got out because you obviously, you're in the public domain, and regardless what people, you know what I mean, the social media and the video phones are there for people to use for their own will, and somebody somewhere will have got footage and it had been leaked, and he would have looked like he was hiding something from somebody, even though how little it was, the littlest thing sometimes can look bigger than what it is, and I think that's what he's done right. He's come out, he's admitted what's happened, and he's brought it to the forefront, and then he's had to deal with it. And you know what I mean? I think he'll have thought about it really in obviously a bigger scale, because he doesn't want to upset players, he doesn't want to upset the apple cart, he doesn't want to upset the group. And I think if things were a little bit difficult or different, and we obviously were struggling in the group, maybe these things would have been a little bit different, because you can't afford to lose your best player and the player who's causing the most problems. So, you know what I mean, it would have been interesting if things were a little bit different.
Can it get very heated among teammates? Is it actually that uncommon, this type of thing?
Nah, for me, mate, it happens all the time. It could be the littlest of things. It could be just a training ground bit of banter gone wrong. It could have been a result on Sunday, which, you know what I mean, people laughing and joking, taking a joke the wrong way, and you react the way that any human being would in the street. You know what I mean, about football. You see people falling out in pubs, football supporters, about banter and on social media, and it just happens. We're all passionate about what we do and when we played, and you hate losing, and you certainly don't want your face getting rubbed into it, so to speak. And if that happened, then he's reacted the way that any probably normal person would have, and it just shows how much he cared about what happened at the weekend. And maybe that's his own admission that the league's a little bit too far away from where he wants it to be at the minute.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? Because it seems odd, because he'd had about 24 hours at least, I think, to, you know, kind of get over it, or not get over it, but at least cool off a bit from what got on at Liverpool, and yet he still appears to have flared up anyway. But, you know, it looks like they've both apologised to each other and they've moved on. Do you reckon that they will have really moved on, or do these things tend to linger around like quite a bit?
I think it probably would have been different if they would be still being in the same camp, because a poor performance by either or on
to next weekend, but might cause a problem. But with them not being there, you know what I mean, they're not at the same club, so I think it'll be fine. I think it'll all be sorted out, and I think the media attention will be on them too so much anyway from now on when they are together next time they play against each other. So I think them two more than anybody, I think, will be probably the best of mates or look like they are anyway.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it certainly appears that way, doesn't it? Hopefully they can put it behind them. So you don't, I mean, look, do you reckon that this is the type of thing that might go on and affect the squad going forward, or do you think other people will just be looking at it and being like, look, this is just a disagreement, you know?
I think sometimes it can have the adverse effect, and it can have a positive effect. It can bring the group together. You know, the racism brought the group together.
Yeah.
They played
out
the skin last time against Bulgaria, so. You know what I mean? Hopefully this has the same effect and it can bring the group together. And, you know, I mean, no one's going to push Raheem out, you know what I mean? Whatever, if he's done wrong or whatever, you know what I mean? Whatever his decision's been made in-house or and things that I know he's not in the squad. But
yeah,
they'll have him back with open arms because he's their most threatened attacking player along with Harry Kane, and you can't afford to lose your best players. And, you know what I mean? The squad will probably miss him going forward this week, so...
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you reckon if England were playing Brazil in, you know, a semi-final of something, that Gareth Southgate drops Raheem Sterling for this?
No, 100% no. And I think that's the grey area we've got here. That, you know, I mean, because we're in such a strong position within the group, and we're coming up with relatively easier games. You know, what I mean, I think it's easier to have him out, and I think that will have been the conversation. We'll take the pressure off. It's games that we're expected to win anyway, so. Go and have a week off and come back next time with a positive attitude, blah, blah, blah. And, you know what I mean, everyone's smiling, everyone's happy. It looks like Gareth's dealt with it in a disciplinary way. But if it's a big game and we need to win on Friday night against X, Y and Z, I don't think he can afford to drop his best player.
That was the former Middlesbrough and Cardiff striker Andy Campbell that joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on Love Sport Breakfast every weekday morning between 6:30 and 10 a.m. Another big thing I think to point out, just finally with this story, is the fact that it was Jordan Henderson who was the kind of mediator in all of this, that convinced Sterling to stay around, was acting in a leadership role. And I think that speaks volumes of Jordan Henderson's leadership qualities, and also asks a lot of questions of Harry Kane, who's been made the England captain, and yet he wasn't the one trying to defuse the tension here. It was Jordan Henderson, who wasn't even at St George's Park, because he's suspended for tomorrow night. He volunteered to come down to St George's Park to sort this situation out. I think, as I said, it speaks volumes for Jordan Henderson's leadership qualities, but also questions Harry Kane's leadership qualities as well. Just a couple of other Premier League lines to bring you. A blow for Newcastle is the news that captain Jamal Lascelles is facing 3 months on the sidelines after damaging ligaments in his knee in a clash with his own teammate, Martin Dubravka. So not a great situation there for Newcastle. And also Granit Xhaka has been in the headlines for all sorts of reasons over the last few weeks. Supposedly has begun to look for accommodation in Milan, having been approached by the city's two clubs. No surprise, really, that it's AC and Inter Milan after a controversial figure. It seems like January could be the time that Xhaka finally leaves Arsenal. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be talking all things Tottenham.
Love Sport.
So plenty of Premier League chat to come later in the hour. We're going to be talking about Bournemouth. Is there any truth in the rumours that Ryan Fraser could be moving to Liverpool in January? Also, could Eddie Howe make that jump up to a big six side right now? We'll also be talking a little bit about Burnley later in the hour, who've made a fairly solid start to the season, as you can expect from Sean Dyche's side. Both Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood have recently signed new long-term contracts at the club. So a decent position for Burnley in these first 12 games of the season. We are going to be talking all things Tottenham now. All is not well. And according to some of the papers today, Pep Mauricio Pochettino perhaps knowing that he is hanging on a little bit and the next few weeks could decide his fate. To get the Spurs perspective now, as I say, we're joined by Flav from the Fighting Cock. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Flav. Looking back at the final game before this international break, it was a 1-1 draw at home against Sheffield United. For many people, Spurs might have been lucky to even get a point from that game. What was your view on that?
Yeah, that's a fair assumption. I think
on over the whole scheme of the game, I think Sheffield United probably did deserve the points. Very unlucky with the toe that was offside, according to VAR. So, yeah, another bad day at the office for Tottenham. You know, we'll go again next week. But yeah, Sheffield United, very good side, and I think they're kind of benefiting massively from the people don't know what to expect, and they've got these overlapping centre backs, which is something that I haven't seen before. And you know, they're taking a lot of people by surprise with their spirit and belief in the system. And Chris Wilder's gone playing well. I think they'll beat better teams than Spurs this year.
An exclusive, Flav, in the Telegraph today. Headline, time running out for Pochettino's Tottenham reign. The Argentine is aware his job is under growing threat. Fears grow. The coach may be unable to save season. Tottenham's winning percentage so far in the Premier League this season is at 25%. Do you think that in the next few weeks it could be make or break for Pochettino, starting with that home game against the away game at West Ham just after the international break? Or do you think that it's a load of old rubbish, what's coming out at the moment?
I don't know what an exclusive is. So exclusive is when you've got information and quotes, I guess, direct from the club. So, I mean, anyone can write any story and put the word exclusive on it. If they've got, if the Telegraph have got sources inside the club that are saying this is the truth, then fair enough, that's an exclusive. The fact is, and these are the facts, this is what we do know. Pochettino is on a gigantic contract. It cost him, it's been mooted, around £32 million to get him out of that contract. The only way Tottenham sack Pochettino is if they come to some sort of agreement, mutual agreement, where they agree to part ways. Pochettino says, this isn't working, I'm not sure, I've kind of run out of ideas. The board say, OK, fair enough. Here's a £15 million handshake, half of your contract paid up, and then you can move on. There's no way Daniel Levy pays, whether he's frustrated or not, pays £32 million to get Pochettino out of the job, unless we lose the next three games and we're in the relegation zone, then he has to act, because the cost of leaving the league is more than what it would cost to replace Pochettino. We're too good a squad for even to consider that. But if something's drastically wrong at Tottenham, then that's a decision that Daniel Levy has to make. But it doesn't depend on West Ham. It depends on the next three or four games. So, I just think that's a lot of nonsense, to be honest. And until, you know, you actually hear stuff from the club where they came in and give them a vote of confidence or something like that, then you can start to put two and two together. But at the moment, I can't see a world where Pochettino's sacked.
Do you think, Flav, there's more chance that he would walk? Because he has made a number of intriguing comments going back actually into last season about how he could leave the club if they won the Champions League. Tottenham currently are sat 11 points off the top four. There's been certain things, and also, and perhaps understandably, maybe not happy with the transfer policy over the last couple of years, not getting rid of players over the summer that he wanted to. Do you think that there's a chance that Pochettino might look at it in the coming weeks and months and say, actually, I'm not too happy with where he's at, and actually he might walk instead of being sacked?
Yeah, I understand your point, but you're making it sound like it's Pochettino who's has kind of been done wrong somehow, and he's going to walk away from a situation that he hasn't helped create. I think while everybody wants Pochettino to stay, if his stance is that he has been undone by the policy of the football club, I think you'd be incorrect. I think he's involved in every decision. He has gone on record previously as saying that Spurs, it was very difficult to upgrade the squad we have, which means that potentially the money was there. It's really easy. It's easy just to kind of throw these. I know this is a conversation point and stuff that people can talk about, but we don't know. We don't know what's gone on. We don't know what Pochettino has sanctioned and what he hasn't sanctioned. But the fact is, he plays a prominent role in our football club, and we're in a situation now he has to take some of the responsibility. So I don't think anyone will look at it if Pochettino walks now and goes and think that he wasn't part of the issue while it hasn't gone right. I'm not saying the challenges were in front of him were huge, and for the football clubs with building this stadium, we didn't know what the upper cost of the stadium would be. We couldn't then splash out on transfers, but you've got to at least give it the next transfer window, if you're Pochettino, or till the summer, to say, okay, I am going to be given what I want. If in January we don't sign players that he's directly after, so then you can say, well, there's nothing I can do, I can walk away. But I think Pochettino feels a responsibility. He turned down major, you know, jobs at Real Madrid and Man United if those rumours were true. So I feel like he's in it for the long haul. He's shown us loyalty by turning those down. We need to show him loyalty that he can turn this round. But it is a case of, you know, we need to start picking up points. You know, I think most of us have kind of given up hopes on the Champions League. That's fine. But, you know, we've got to start picking up points and start playing with some sort of purpose, because, you know, you really will be... It's not just the fact that Spurs wouldn't sack him. There's just pressures elsewhere for him to Spurs to make a decision, or for him to walk out of from a place where he can't make a change, or he can't make the changes necessary to re-improve the form. You know, then those calls might be too strong.
As you said, Flav, Pochettino isn't blameless, and I think sometimes maybe he does escape some of the blame, because it's easy to kind of blame other people than the manager, which is a rare situation, because most of the time people do blame the manager, and there are things that he should be at fault for. But what I would also say is that you look at, for example, at the moment with him not starting Christian Eriksen, although Eriksen says it's nothing to do with the contract, with him not always starting some of those players that are out of contract, surely that's a statement that he's sending out, kind of not just to Daniel Levy, but to kind of the national media, that there are players in this squad, quite clearly, who are not going to sign new contracts, that he wanted to move on, get out of the club and move on with a bunch of players that he wanted, that this is quite clearly a message. We don't know the ins and outs, obviously, the exact ins and outs, but surely this is a message that he has got players in this squad that, because they're not going to sign new contracts, he didn't want to take forward into this season.
Yeah, I definitely did. I think that was a failing of the team. But if we are going to just talk in you know, hypotheticals and assumptions, we as far as we know, there was no bids coming in for Christian Eriksen. The one that came in was for Manchester United, and the rest, the one that he wanted, Real Madrid, Barcelona, didn't happen. So, yeah, if the bids were there and they were coming in and we didn't sell him because it was the sake of about 5 million difference, then, yeah, you need to look at the club there. But as far as we know, there were no bids come in. That was what came out. You know, I think there was a meeting between Daniel Levy and the Trust, Tottenham Hotspur Sports Trust, about a month ago, and they talked about the moving on of players, and it specifically mentioned Eriksen, there have been no concrete offers for him. For the club that he wanted to join. So, yeah, but the biggest failing is not getting rid of those players, because the biggest part of the problem this year, it seems to be, is those players that seemingly want to move on or have had their fill of Pochettino and these training regimes, and the new blood needs to come in. So, yeah, that seems to be the biggest failing. But, you know, next couple, what is it, 7 or 8 weeks until the January transfer window, where we can make major changes.
Do you think that there will be major changes in January, Flav? Because Pochettino maybe suggested that a few weeks ago, then downplayed the prospect of many players coming and going. Do you think that we can expect to see a number of players leave Tottenham and a number of players come in? How do you see the January transfer window unfolding for Tottenham?
The thing you mentioned about Pochettino and what he says in press conferences, you can't take. I don't know if English is the barrier, or he's constantly playing games and being a politician in the press room. So you can never kind of take it for a face value with Pochettino, what he says. And we've kind of known that. It's become frustrating with Spurs fans, but we've kind of known it and got used to it over the years. With regards to January, we don't have a choice. The problem, often the problems when things are going wrong at football are not easily solved and not apparent. Like, something's not right. That's what you'll hear about people that talk about clubs that are not doing well. Something's not right down at White Hart Lane or whatever it might be. But what is clearly wrong is that we need fresh blood. We need players that are receptive. And, you know, if you looked at Ndombele's start to the season, which has been excellent, and Lo Celso's looked very good now that he's fit, these are players that are fresh in and are responsive and are willing to do what Pochettino's asked them to do. And it seems like one of the easiest fixes for that would be to bring new players in. So if, you know, we have any aspirations of turning this season around, and you only get two opportunities to improve the squad, January being one, it's almost crucial that we do sign someone. Not just someone, we need to sign three or four. And if it means paying more than you would the market value, which isn't something that Levy likes to do, then so be it. But this is a situation that we haven't been used to being in anyway. So it means sometimes a drastic action needs to happen to solve the problem. And this time it means Daniel Levy getting his checkbook out again.
And just finally, Flav, I wanted to get your views on some comments from Danny Rose that are in the national media this afternoon, saying that he will leave Tottenham in 18 months at the end of his contract, but he will not be forced out. What do you make of those Rose comments?
Right, so this is basically at a point where he's clearly something's happened with Daniel Rose. He's the type of player that grows old quickly because of the way he plays. Very blustery, you know, full passion, all hands on deck kind of attitude. Which means at 29, he's quite old. He's an old 29, if you know what I mean. So Spurs, I think it's clear that he's not good enough. His body can't do what it used to enable him to do, and his brain's still there, but he's sort of playing the wrong ball. He's trying things a second too late, and it's just at this level he's got found out. So Spurs, obviously, given the fact that he's probably on about £80,000-£90,000 a week, would it be in there? It would be logical to try and move him on. But from his perspective, he's going to get a big move if he stays to the end. So I understand his logic, understand why he would think that. It's just the problem with Danny Rose over the last couple of years. It's just the stuff that comes out of his mouth. Sometimes you can applaud it because it's honest and it's what you want to hear from a pro. And we don't necessarily have to hear our player straight bat it all the time. But other times, you know, we're going through a bit of a time of it at Tottenham. We could really do without these interviews coming out and just adding further fuel around the fire. I'm not happy about it, but Danny Rose is Danny Rose, and he's always been this way. So there's not much more I can say about it. It's not surprising.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Flav. That was Flav from the Fighting Cock talking about Pochettino. I think the blame has to go multiple parties. I think Pochettino sometimes has escaped criticism, the fact that he's won nothing in his 5 years at Tottenham and deserves criticism. And I think there should be genuine questions being asked of him whether he should be sacked. But at the same time, at times it's been so tough to be the manager of that club when Daniel Levy hasn't been willing to get into his pocket, hasn't got rid of players that quite clearly don't want to be there. And that is tough. So I think it's a situation where so many at Tottenham are to blame. They're definitely not getting top four. Absolutely no chance. 11 points off the top four. And as Flav there, it doesn't help when you get people like Danny Rose at the club making comments like that. I mean, ridiculous. I mean, Danny Rose has said how sometimes he feels like giving up and wanting, he doesn't really enjoy playing. Well, retire then if you're not enjoying it. I don't really get that. If you want to get in touch with us, what should happen at Tottenham? Should Pochettino get sacked? Or will it be more likely that he walks? Call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be moving down to the South Coast and talking all things Bournemouth next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, that number, 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. Get your views in on Pochettino. It's a really interesting one because in some ways, during his reign, I think he's been given a really bad hand and at times hasn't been given any money. And that's not easy to be competing with the other bigs, the other teams in the big six. But at other times, you look back to last season, they haven't won away from home in the Premier League against the current Premier League side since December. They haven't won away since the early part of the year against Fulham in the Premier League. So their form has been terrible. And I think it merits being sacked. I think at any of the other top six sides, he would have been sacked. But there is that feeling that maybe he's been hard done by. I think he will walk before the end of the calendar year. We're going to be turning our attention now to the South Coast and to talk all things Bournemouth. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Peter Rutzler, Bournemouth reporter for The Athletic. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Peter. In a general look at Bournemouth's season so far, the ninth on 16 points after 12 games, is that where you would have expected Bournemouth to be? And would you say it represents a good start to the season or maybe just an okay start to the season?
Hi, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's such a tricky one with Bournemouth. It feels like they do this every year. Consistency is the big problem. I think when we look at it in isolation, there are different segments of the season which have gone well, other sections that haven't gone so well. And I think the result against Newcastle coming straight before the international break sort of leaves us a sour taste in the mouth, but mainly on the basis that, you know, Bournemouth could be up to fifth. And judging from the way they played in that game, there were spells that were good, spells that were bad. So it's just this common sentiment with Bournemouth, this common theme that there are good signs and bad signs, and that sort of leaves it on a balanced sense. But all that, when you take a step back and actually look at the way they've played this season, you know, it's pretty good going. Top half, I mean, the Premier League is so congested. I mean, a couple of bad results on Sunday, you're near the bottom three, and a couple of good ones, you're in the top six. So for now, I think, you know, they've got to be happy with the points they've got on the board, the matches which they've lost. I mean, Newcastle aside, you know, Arsenal, City, they're games that, you know, you'd expect to lose. So on balance, yeah, it's actually quite positive, and there are positive signs and positive parts to the way they've played. And going forward, you know, that there are, I guess, positive. It's a positive outlook.
I wanted to get your views, Peter, on one of the new signings for Bournemouth this season, Harry Wilson, who joined on loan from Liverpool before the season started. He seems to be making quite a significant impact, not just scoring some pretty phenomenal free kicks like he was doing at Derby last season, but he seems to be fitting in quite well into Eddie Howe's system this season.
Yeah, he's done well, actually. I mean, I think I was speaking about it on the station before, a month ago, I think. And there was a sort of a feeling that he'd gone a bit quiet. I mean, he scored that wonderful goal against City, which was just phenomenal. But then after that, his influence in games had sort of tailed off a little bit. He wasn't getting on the ball so much. Didn't really seem to suit Bournemouth's very quick transitional style, which is back to front quickly, using fast pace out wide in the channels, pace of Wilson, your Frasers, the Callum Wilson, that is. And you don't really see that with Harry Wilson. He's much more of a technical player who likes to come inside. But of late, he seems to have found his feet a lot more. I think there was always that sense it would take a little bit of time with him to adapt to the way Eddie Howe wants him to play. And, you know, on Saturday, especially in that first half, there was a spell where Bournemouth were completely in control, and Harry Wilson was at the heart of that. Of course, he scored that wonderful set-piece goal, but it was the way he was linking up with Josh King, with Frasier, with Lewis Cook as well, interchanging, coming into field, influencing play, dictating. And that was more of the Harry Wilson I think we've come to expect. And he's, in that sense, he's actually pushed on quite well, and he is adapting. And, you know, he has settled in quite well. He's moved down here and he's got on really well with the squad. I think he knew Chris Meppen and David Brooks beforehand, through Wales, of course. So he's settled in very quickly and he's adapting well. And, you know, he's always in and around the first team. You know, there is competition. You know, Arnaud Danjuma came in the summer, multi-million pound signing, about 13 million, I think. And, you know, he's kept him out the side, he kept Frasier out the side at times, Solanke out the side. So, you know, he's done well. It'll be interesting to see how he does when Brooks comes back from injury, which should be within, you know, before December.
You mentioned Ryan Fraser's name there, Peter. He's out of contract at the end of the season. Now, there are a few reports the other day suggesting or linking him with a move to Liverpool. Now, reporters on Merseyside claiming or rubbishing those reports, saying there wasn't really any truth in them. Have you heard any suggestion? Obviously, in January, maybe the time, if he isn't going to sign a new contract, for Bournemouth to get some money for him. What's the latest on Ryan Fraser? Is he going to sign a new contract, or is it likely that in the near future he's going to be applying his trade elsewhere?
I think with Frasier, we don't know if he'll sign a new contract. I think the Liverpool rumours, you know, as my colleague James Pearce said from Liverpool, and as I've heard as well, so for us, there wasn't any substance to it. But that said, you know, he is out of contract at the end of the year. January will be an important period, so it'll be interesting to see what happens during that time. You know, he's still an important player for Bournemouth. Eddie Howe has always said that. Ryan Fraser's sort of focus, you know, is generally just on playing football. But as with any of these things, when you are entering that stage of your contract, you know, there will be discussions, there will be that sort of thing going on. But at the moment, no, there's nothing tying him to any club. There's no deal in the pipeline or anything like that. And it's just wait and see, really. It will come to a head, I'm sure. And I think January will be a very interesting period for him. I think from Bournemouth's perspective, they want to, you know, he was a key player last season. Hasn't really hit the same form this year. He's been finding his feet a little bit. He looked good on Saturday, and he has been used all over the place by Howe. And, you know, he is very much, you know, a product of Howe's way of playing and knows the system well. So he is an important player in that sense. So I think it's a wait and see situation. But, you know, on the Liverpool rumours, my understanding is there wasn't any substance to it.
And just finally, Peter, I wanted to get your views on Eddie Howe, because he's a manager that I really, really like, and I really rate him. I've got a lot of respect and a lot of time for Bournemouth, the way they play, the way they've come up from the Championship. Still a reasonably small club, considering they only get 12,000 in at the Vitality in home games. But I really like the way Bournemouth play, that he sticks to his guns. How far away is he, or is he ever going to get the opportunity? Because the joke is that if he had a foreign name, then he'd come into contention more for a big six job. Do you think that Eddie Howe is ready now to make that step up? And do you think that when these clubs, and there are a number of them, Arsenal, Tottenham, United, that could be changing their manager in the next 6-12 months, should Eddie Howe really be near the top of potential shortlists as a new manager?
I think he is. I think he is. I think that is the case. And, you know, I mean, that's the old Sam Allardyce line, isn't it? You know, that the British managers don't get the same consideration. And I think that might be considered with Sean Dyche as well. I think Howe is slightly different in the way that he plays football with Bournemouth and his attacking philosophy, always wanting to be on the front foot and having that caveat of trying to entertain supporters as much as getting results. Of course, it's a results business and results matter first, but, you know, he sets out to try and entertain the fans. And, you know, the job he's done at Bournemouth is extraordinary. And I wrote a piece this week on when the fans, you know, club together to buy him back. So, and he does have this really close connection with Bournemouth and the supporters. This is his place, you know, his domain. And, you know, I think, especially in recent seasons with the way Bournemouth have played, you know, they haven't pushed on extraordinarily. And you know, battled and ended up in Europe, but they haven't been involved in really any relegation dogfights either. And in that sense, it's actually very impressive. You know, I was having a discussion with someone the other day. You know, it's for sure Bournemouth have been in that mid-table position for the last 5 years, but when you consider the progress within the Premier League, the amount of money that's come in, how squads have become stronger. I mean, look at say Everton, for example, spending what, 150 million in the last couple of seasons. Bournemouth haven't done that. Yet they've still been able to progress. They've still kept some of the players who were playing in League One, like, you know, Simon Francis or Steve Cook, who's been excellent of late, Adam Smith. So there's been that progression. And I think that's what makes Eddie Howe so appealing, is the coaching side. You know, he's known for being a coach. He likes getting hands-on and developing players, young players. Bournemouth have one of the youngest squads in the Premier League now. So there's always that looking for the potential. It's building, it's construction, it's moving forward. And for sure, he'll be an appealing manager for the top six clubs. But it just depends, really. I mean, there are lots of different factors with it. You know, he's got a good situation at Bournemouth. You know, he's, I think I said this before, but, you know, he's the king here. You know, it's there's no way that he can do no wrong, really. And I think that makes it, you know, moving to the top six clubs not easy, but he's also ambitious. So it's that weighing up the two. And for sure, he'll always be under consideration, I think, as long as Bournemouth continue to perform the way they are.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Peter. That was Peter Rutzler, Bournemouth reporter for The Athletic. As I said, Eddie Howe's a manager, really rate very, very highly. He's done a phenomenal job. To think 4 or 5 years ago that at this point Bournemouth would be an established, settled Premier League club just highlights the phenomenal job he's done there. And I think really should be under serious consideration for these top jobs. That, for example, Tottenham, maybe looking, or whether Pochettino is still going to be there in the next few months, Eddie Howe should be right near the top of that list. The only concern is that would Eddie Howe be able to attract the top players? That's the only doubt. But how do you know that Eddie Howe isn't going to be a top manager unless you give him an opportunity? And I think he's proven himself at a club like Bournemouth for a number of years now. And I think he may well turn out that this was his level and he isn't good enough. But you don't know until you're given that opportunity. So I think he should be given that opportunity at a top six club. What do you think? Is Eddie Howe good enough to be a top six manager? Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We're going to be moving up to the northwest of England next, and we're going to be talking all things Burnley.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking all things Burnley now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Natalie Bromley from the No Nay Never podcast. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Natalie. Looking back at the last result before the international break, a 3-0 home win against West Ham. I thought this was such a predictable game. It was always going to be a Burnley win. Were you as confident as that going into the game?
Strangely, I was, actually. I know there was a bit of doom and gloom following the result the week before away at Sheffield United, but this Burnley side only ever tends to have blitz. It doesn't tend to have long-standing problems. Well, not as yet, anyway. And I always knew that Sheffield United away was just a blip, and it was just an off day. Everybody had a bad day at the office. But there's a real mental toughness about this Burnley side. You hear Sean Dyche talking about it all the time, and he will have told them what they needed to do. They will have known what they needed to do. And given the perceived fragility in the West Ham mentality at the moment, then I agree, I could only see Burnley winning.
Looking at some of the positive off-field news as well, it's accompanied with the fact that Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood have both recently signed new long-term contracts at the club. Ashley Barnes, I think, said he wants to play the rest of his career at Burnley. I'm sure that must be really great news that Burnley are doing reasonably well on the field. They've made a good, solid start to the season, and off the field, that these players are committing their long-term futures to the club.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's great news in the short term. As ever, this comes with a word of warning. We seem to be spending a lot of time and money on extending the contracts of long-term players, which is great in the short term. But that shouldn't be at the expense of bringing fresh talent in. And I'm sure Sean will be aware of that. I'm a little bit concerned about the slightly ageing nature of our squad now. And I don't think this particular squad has got longevity in it. I think we've got maybe one more season. So we do need to be as proactive in the market with bringing in younger and fresher players, as well as keeping the current first team stable. So great news, but always with that word of warning.
Do you think, though, Natalie, that obviously bringing in new players and always seeking to improve the squad is an important part, but I would say that equally in any sport, that it's all well and good bringing in new players that will improve you, but you need to keep your best players, your most crucial players as well. So I get what you're saying about kind of needing fresh blood and needing to perhaps inject a bit more youth in there that perhaps the likes of Dwight McNeil have added, Nick Pope have added, but actually keeping these players is what will prevent a situation where if maybe a whole host of new young players come in, the risk is there's a Burnley might slip down and then get into a relegation scrap. Whereas at the moment, Burnley are a safely established Premier League club.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And my comments were not intended to be one or the other. It's about balance, isn't it? You're quite right. You could change half the first team and it all falls to pieces and we're suddenly not the resilient side that we were and we find ourselves in a relegation battle. But then equally, if you don't proactively bring in fresh talent, you can suddenly find that players are a little tired, they're a little older, they're past their peak and you have the same effect. So what I'm getting at is it's about a balance here. And, you know, I'm absolutely delighted that some of these players have signed long-term deals. And you're quite right, you've got to maintain that stability. And also something that I think is missing a lot in Premier League these days is breeding that loyalty as well. If you show the loyalty to those players, they will or should fight tooth and nail for your club. So it's balance, that's all I was getting at.
What did you make of Sean Dyche's decision on the weekend to start with new fullbacks? So Phil Bardsley started at right back, Charlie Taylor at left back. I thought actually Charlie Taylor would start the season ahead of Eric Peters, but he's come in and done a solid job. Matt Loughton on the other side has been with Burnley a number of seasons now. What did you make of that tactical, I suppose, also personnel change at fullback?
I think it was needed and it was certainly expected. Dyche had alluded to it in his pre-match interviews that the people were fighting for places and he had some decisions to make. I'm not sure Charlie Taylor is that radical a change. You're quite right, we all expected him to, and he is the first choice left back, but he was injured at the start of the season, which is why he didn't play. Peters had to come in because Taylor wasn't available for the first probably four games of the season. I was surprised then that Taylor didn't then get his place back and keep it, but I think that's it now. I think Taylor should and will start at left back the rest of the season. And right back's a funny one because I actually prefer Matt Loughton as a player to Phil Bardsley. I like him, I rate him, I think he's great. But you can't hide from the fact that Loughton's had a shocking start to the season. And I'm sure he'll pull that around. I'm sure, I keep saying his blip thing. So I think the time was right to give him a rest and a break, let him regroup and let somebody else just steady the ship a little bit at defence, because we were leaking goals for fun, which is very uncharacteristic of our defence.
Another good weekend for Dwight McNeil. He's now up to 4 Premier League assists for the season, a joint high amongst English players. You look around teenagers in Europe, he's right up there amongst assists. This is a player that was released by Manchester United at the age of 14 for not being able to cross the ball. Well, he certainly changed things around. How good a talent is this young lad? Because he seems to be a really kind of impressing a lot of people.
Oh, he's absolutely phenomenal. And it frustrates me a little bit because if you look at the crosses that he made at the weekend, unfortunately, the first one was the offside goal for Chris Wood. But, he put it in again for Chris Wood's actual goal, the third goal, which was then 2-0. if somebody like, I don't know, Sterling or you know, one of the bigger players made that cross at the weekend, it'd be played on loop on national media day after day after day after day. But, you know, we don't necessarily get that media exposure at the lesser clubs, shall we say. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I'd quite like to keep Dwight under the radar as much as is humanly possible. We're hearing reports, I don't know whether this is Chinese whispers or not, but we're hearing reports that Southgate is fast-tracking him through the under-21s with a view to calling up to the first team as soon as possible. I don't expect he will be a Burnley player next season, which is one of the other things I had in the back of my head when I was talking earlier about the balance between bringing in fresh new players and keeping an eye on the ageing side that you've got. Because without Dwight McNeil, we are seriously short of youth and creativity in the side. So yeah, I think he will go for big money in the summer. I absolutely do, depressingly.
And a general view to finish there, Natalie, on the season so far. 10th place on 15 points after the first 12 games. Would you say that represents a good start to the season and what you expected when we started this season?
I think so. I think if you look at the fixtures, you have to be pleased with that points return. If you look at the games that we've played, we've lost the games that we were supposed to lose. We've won the ones we thought we would win. And the draws were, you know, the tough away draws at the likes of Wolves away and Brighton away, the ones where those teams are really fighting for home 3 points. So I think it's pretty average. I don't think we've done anything spectacular, but I don't think we've had a difficult spell, I guess. The only question mark that people would say is a bad result away at Sheffield United. But given their start to the season, I'm not entirely sure that an away loss at Bramall Lane is actually an unexpected result. There'll be a lot better teams than us that will struggle there this season. So I'm really pleased. It's a good start to the season, but there's a long way to go. We've got to get through the Christmas period. We've got to get through the January transfer window. Do I expect that we'll flirt with the bottom three times this season? Yes, I do, because that's the nature of the league, and you go through spells where you've got a run of 5 or 6 difficult fixtures. But I want us to be pushing around 50 points this season, and I want us to try and look between 10th and 13th, and if we keep this performance up, I think that's about right.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Natalie. That was Natalie Bromley from the No Nay Never podcast, talking about Dwight McNeil. He looks like a really good young player. Natalie, not particularly optimistic they'll be able to keep hold of him, that a big club will come in for him in the summer. But I think it's been a really solid start for Burnley. It's about what we expected. And a bit like Bournemouth, they've become an established Premier League side. They just go under the radar. They do their business, especially at Turf Moor. As I said, that game against West Ham, that was so predictable that we would win comfortably and keep a clean sheet. And that's exactly what they did. So a decent start for Sean Dyche's men. And could we see Dwight McNeil potentially fast-tracked into the full England squad in the very near future?
This is Love Sport.